नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री भगवान उवाच। वरं वृणी त्वं भद्रं वो यूयं मे नृपनन्दन सौहार्देना पृथग् धर्मास् तुष्टोऽहं सौहृदेन वः। The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear sons of the King, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since the kings of King Prachini Barhishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachini Barhishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they have all different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions, and consequently they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in the society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal: to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benediction to his devotees. As indicated in this verse, we can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the sons of King Prachini Barhishat. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, entitled The Activities of the Prachetas, Text 8. those beloved Vaishnavas who have organized this conference have personally selected this verse for me to speak from. It appears that they feel it is very relevant to all of us. In fact, it is not just relevant, but it is absolutely essential. The relationships among devotees is not a detail of the path of bhakti. It is a foundational principle. There are 9 processes of devotional service. Saravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dashyare pujana sakijana atmanivedana. Beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering. But none of these practices can have true substance, nor are they substantially sustainable without understanding and practicing the culture of Vaishnav satsang. Satsang means to be in the association of devotees, to actually take great pleasure with each other in hearing about Krishna, in chanting the glories and names of Krishna, in remembering Krishna, in performing puja to Krishna, in offering prayers individually and together for Krishna, in carrying out the orders of Krishna and the spiritual master, rendering service together, and ultimately becoming friends with Krishna, and Atmanivedan, surrendering our very life, body, mind, words, and soul for Krishna's pleasure. This concept of Sakyam, befriending Krishna, is a very elevated position that we cannot imitate. We cannot pretend that we are cowherd boyfriends of Krishna and run to different people's homes to steal butter and give to Krishna. But we can have intimate friendship with Krishna by having intimate friendship with his devotees. And what is that intimate friendship? There are universal principles that are common with friendship in this material world and friendship on the spiritual platform. Being respectful, being understanding, genuinely caring. When a person's in need or when they're down, we don't walk away from them, ignore them, but we really accelerate our efforts to try to help them whatever way we can. If there's no other way, we sincerely and fervently pray for them. So in this world, it is like that. In Kali Yuga, it's quite rare for people to be lifelong friends. Oftentimes, when people's interests change as they're growing through life, their friends change also. And then later on, if there's some sort of reunion, it's more of a formality, just to kind of enjoy remembering the old days. But there's no real bond of hearts, spirit. But friends that actually are there for each other, who care, that's a friend in the material world. But in Krishna consciousness and spiritual life, there's a profound extension to that friendship, because it's based on knowledge. It's not based on ignorance. Material friendship is based on, I am this body, you are this body. What is in relation to my body is mine, and what is in relation to your body is yours. And because that I and mine principle puts us in such a vulnerable situation, because the false ego, I want to be the enjoyer, I want to be the controller, I want to be the proprietor, I want to be in the center of the universe. And if someone facilitates that for me, they are my friend. And I'll facilitate that for them so that they'll keep facilitating it for me. And it could be done in a very innocent way. But at the time of death, everything's finished. Spiritual friendship is based on the true understanding, Aham Brahmasmi. I am the eternal soul, and you are the eternal soul. And actually, we are one. Not in the impersonalist philosophical conception, but we are one in our purpose. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman. There is one eternal Bhagavan, Lord Sri Krishna, is the source of everything that exists. And there are many, many eternals, Nityanam. They are the parts and parcels, the expansions of Krishna, of the Jiva Tattva. And all of the Jivas, all of the spirit souls that are embodied within all the various species of life, they are eternally subordinate as the loving servants of the Lord. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, he's the source of all material, all spiritual worlds. He's the father and mother of all living beings. We can never be that. We never were that. And believe it or not, we're not like that now. Srila Prabhupada gives the example when the spark is in the fire, it completely shares the light of the fire. But when the spark is separated with the fire, then it is easily extinguished. So when we understand our natural relationship with Krishna as his eternal servants, then we share the light, the eternal light of eternal knowledge and eternal happiness based on eternal love with Krishna. But when due to the ahankar or the false ego, Maya, she covers that eternal relation we have with Krishna. And like in a dream, we forget it. And in that dream, we try to be the proprietor, the controller, and the enjoyer.
instead of recognizing Krishna is all of those things. That we disconnect from the current of His grace, the current of His love. And in doing so, we really disconnect from each other. In Krishna, we're all united eternally. Without Krishna, we're all disconnected by this ego. But because the natural propensity of the soul is to find happiness, pleasure, in love, we try to find that somehow or other in something or someone in this world. But because it's based not on truth, but on the ever-perishing, fleeting experiences of the mind and senses, such relationships with things and with people, dukalaya mashashvatam, they always culminate in misery because they're temporary. Our relationships with each other are eternal when we're connected with Krishna through each other, or we're connected with each other through Krishna. So friendship in the spiritual sense is we're there within this, in the spiritual world, friendship is just the eternal natural expression of the soul toward Krishna in every living being. Nothing could interrupt that, nothing could impede that. It's just absolutely natural. In this material world, such friendship has to be cultivated. And such friendship will be tested in so many ways. Because Krishna is not going to allow us to really be good friends spiritually unless we're very sincere and we really understand what it takes and we're willing to do it. It's not a cheap thing. Having true spiritual relationships is really up to each and every one of us to open our hearts, to be friends with each other, not on your terms, not on my terms, but to be friends with each other on Krishna's terms. And Krishna tells here that when someone develops that friendship with service to Him in the center, He's very pleased. And that's actually the only goal of a devotee. Devotees recognize, I am the eternal soul, and all living beings are eternal souls. So if our friendship is to try to help one another to liberate each other's souls from selfishness, from lust, from anger, from envy, from greed, from arrogance and illusion. Not material life is oftentimes, our friendship is based on feeding these propensities. In spiritual life, our friendship is based on helping each other overcome these impediments by keeping Krishna in the center. But knowing that not everyone is already a paramhamsa, we need each other. We're in a battlefield. Maya has strong armies, and she has so many weapons. When you drive down the streets of Mumbai or Pune or Aurangabad or Nasik or Nigri, wherever else you may be from, all the hoardings are Maya's weapons. the internet, the television, the radio, so many things Maya uses as her weapons. Of course, we can also use those things for Krishna's service. But Maya uses those for the purpose of keeping us distracted. To increase the anartas we have. And so often in this world, friendship is about increasing our anartas. There's friendship in the mode of ignorance, where we help each other to get intoxicated. We help each other to create violence, even in the name of God or nationalism or whatever. There's friendship in the mode of passion. We help each other get money. We help each other get better sex life. We help each other get so many things, more fame, more prestige, more power. There's friendship in the mode of goodness, actually helping each other become moral, nonviolent, good to others. And there's friendship in the mode of sudasattva, or transcendentalism, bhakti, where our friendship is actually based on orienting all of our physical, emotional, and verbal activities in service to God, in inspiring one another, in enthusing one another, in protecting one another. In other words, we really care about each other. We really care to help people. And within this material world, to express that concern for the soul and others, we are not disconnected from the human side of the reality that we're living in. We care about the soul, but we're also concerned about our bodies and our minds too, because they're the vehicles in which the soul is in. And it's hard to actually touch a person, reach a person's soul, unless it's through the medium of the body and the senses and the mind and the intelligence. After all, Srila Prabhupada's books are completely transcendental. And Prabhupada said anyone who touches these books is going to get connected with Krishna. But what do they touch it with? They touch it with their body, this earth, water, fire, air, and ether machine. Yes? But they touch it through the body. They're getting a connection with Krishna. And they said, and how much more benefit if they read it? But we read it with our eyes. Which are just kind of these little fleshy, watery things that are in our middle of our heads. So the medium of receiving that is through our eyes. And when we chant the names of the Lord, it's through the medium of our tongue. And when we're hearing Harikatha, it's through the medium of our ears. So in Krishna consciousness, the senses are spiritualized. And ultimately the mind, unless we're attentive, unless we're receptive, then there's minimal benefits that come through our bodies. Devotees have physical bodies that they're using in Krishna consciousness. And to the degree we're absorbed in using our bodies in Krishna consciousness, our bodies are completely transcendental. That means they're transcendental in the spirit in which they're existing. And they're saturated with spiritual energy by their connection with Krishna. But still, the physical body has to go through old age, disease, and death. And a devotee who gives his or her life in devotional service for so many years and then get a terminal disease. Friendship is to give every possible comfort to that person's body while helping that person remember Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. And really helping the person's mind dealing with the extreme crisis of the process of disease and death, where everything's going to be stripped away through our appreciation, through our affection, through our teachings, repeating the teachings of the great souls. We try to create an environment of the body and mind to help a person. And that's our service. It's our service to God when we serve on this material level to help people to remember Krishna, to love Krishna. And when it is with that compassion for the soul at the heart of it, for the pleasure of Krishna, then our friendships become truly spiritual. There are different levels of dharma. Dharma to so many causes may be there. And they may be beneficial, they may be good on this material level. But Bhakti Vinod calls Krishna consciousness jiva dharma, the actual dharma for a person's eternal soul, to reconnect them with Krishna. And in this world, there are so many philanthropic dharmas, nationalistic dharmas, religious dharmas, economic dharmas, educational dharmas, healthcare dharmas, so many dharmas. Varnashram dharma. But our concern is Daivi Varnashram dharma. And Srimad Bhagavatam explains very simply what is Daivi Varnashram dharma. Atha pumbir dvichastrestas varanashrama vibhagasha shvanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshin. Whatever our varna, whatever our ashram, or whatever other situation we may have, whatever similarities we have with each other, whatever differences we have with each other, the only success of our life, the only truly meaningful part of our life, is how we're pleasing Krishna. Samsidhya Hari Toshana. How we're pleasing Lord Hari. To inspire, to encourage, to bring the best out in each other. That's what friendship is. From this perspective, in relation to this conference that we are having, to be a truly good leader in Krishna consciousness means to be truly a good friend. Doesn't mean to be a dictator. Doesn't mean just to be a disciplinary person. Doesn't mean just to be, you know, defeating people with logic and argument. Those things can be helpful. Those things can be utilized. But they're only going to be really effective when we are really people's friends. A leader, a true Krishna conscious leader, has to really care about people. And there are different kinds of people who care in different ways. It's not just a black and white situation. So many people in Kali Yuga, they just want black and white answers to all questions and all problems and all difficulties in life. But as far as I can see, there's certain black and white things. Krishna's Surya Sam Maya. That Krishna is the sun and Maya is darkness. That's black and white. Yes? So that we accept very wholeheartedly. Krishna's the sun, Maya's darkness. Black and white. But as far as living within this material world and actually being effective in a way to please Krishna, not everything's always black and white. Kaladesha Patra, according to the time, the place, and the people we're dealing with, we have to apply this principle that Krishna is the sun and Maya is darkness. Because we have to somehow or other effectively help each other to come out of the darkness and into the light of Krishna's grace. We have to care. And what does it mean to care? This kind of leader can have a sustainable impact in people and in the world. A person who genuinely cares for the soul of others. And genuinely care means to really do what's required to help a person to be connected and keep connected to Krishna. It's like I was reading just yesterday in Shyamasundara Prabhu's book. Prabhupada was given by Shyamasundara Prabhu and Malati Devi a little wooden figure of, they didn't know what it was, but it said made in India. Malati was in a store. She had no money. She saw something made in India, so she just kind of collected it. And she put it on her little mantle where they lived, and Shyamasundara saw it, said, made in India. It looked really strange. So he went up to Prabhupada with Mukunda Goswami Maharaj, those days he was a married man, and put it in front of Prabhupada and said, what is this? They kind of thought it was a joke of some sort, you know, because this little kind of painted piece of wood with a big round eyes and a red smile. And Prabhupada bowed down and with tears in his eyes started offering prayers. He said, where did you get this? Bring Malati Devi. She came. Prabhupada said, was there others? He said, yes, there were barrels of these. He said, no, but were there other color ones? He said, yes, there were two other colors. He said, please get them. This is Krishna, and that's his brother and sister. Now, these are people that didn't know anything. They were just devotees. They were just kind of becoming devotees. They hadn't read any books or anything. They just met Prabhupada a few days ago. So then she went and collected two more. And then he said, now you're this high, can you carve them? Shyamasundara was carving. And one day Prabhupada came to Shyamasundara's Prabhu's apartment. And he pointed his cane on top of Jagannath's head, or Balaram, I don't remember. He said, what is this? And Shyamasundara got really shy. He said, Prabhupada, there's cigarettes. It was a pack of cigarettes. Pall Mall cigarettes. Because he was still smoking. He was smoking as he was carving. And Prabhupada took his cane and went And the cigarettes flew off Juggernaut's head and onto the wall and to the floor. And then Prabhupada said, "Don't let one little stick of tobacco come between you and Krishna." And then he said, "Smoke one less every day until you can give them up." He didn't chastise him. He kind of did. He actually did chastise him. But he did it in such a way that inspired him. Why did he give it up? Because he felt Prabhupada loved him so much and cared about him so much. He was doing it just to please Prabhupada because he had faith in Prabhupada. And within a week or so, he never smoked a cigarette again. And that's how he got people to follow the principles. So Prabhupada disciplined. He disciplined the best. He got people to go to where he wanted them to go, but he did it effectively because he really cared about them. That's what kind of friend Prabhupada was. And these devotees were willing to do everything and anything, take any risk in their life, give up everything just to please Prabhupada. Why? Because he was their best friend. Because they trusted him so much, he really, no one else in the world cares about me like him. And years later, when there were thousands and thousands of devotees, very few had any personal interactions with Prabhupada. Very, very few. But we felt he was our best friend. And we were willing to do anything to please him. Because we had that trust that he's our friend. It's not that we had to sit and just talk to him. 95% of the devotees never got that opportunity to just sit and talk with him. Maybe once every couple of years you would get to sit in his class. And, oh, that's... we never could deserve such a thing. But we had faith that he cared. He was our friend. And do you want to know what the most incredible thing was? We knew that in order to please him and serve his mission, we have to cooperate with each other. We have to make friendships with each other. And I've oftentimes give the analogy in my own life. When I first came to a community in America, I was asked to shovel mud and then take care of cows. And the person I was working with and under, I didn't like him at all. And he really didn't like me. And I remember thinking, if I wasn't a devotee, I would have nothing to do with a person like this. Everything about the way he does things, his values of things, everything, just doesn't match me. Our egos are in complete conflict with each other. They actually were. He thought I was kind of just like some sentimental Babaji that just came from India. He's kind of a useless person. And I thought he was just always calculating. And I didn't like to calculate. And I hated people that calculated. But somehow or other, We're in the same little goshala together. It wasn't a big one like here at Okoboraniko. It was just a tiny little 150-year-old shack that was our goshala. And he used to, because he was kind of my authority, he would just tell me, do this and do that. And I would do it. But somehow or other, you know, there was that conflict, there was that clash. But then something happened. I just readjusted my mind. If I want to love Prabhupada, I have to love this person. I have to treat this person with respect. I have to honor that this person is serving my Guru Maharaj. And I have to become humble to do that. And he kind of did the same thing with me. And amazingly, we became best friends. He's calculating. But I respect you. So it actually, it didn't just happen like this. It wasn't just all of a sudden the light of love awakened in him. It took months and months of just trying to practice this principle. Yes, the ego was still there. The disturbances were still there. But for the sake of Prabhupada, I'm going to respect, I'm going to honor, and we're going to be friends. Because Prabhupada's in the center. Krishna's in the center. And through doing that, we became deeper friends than practically anybody who was like me. Because that's pretty superficial when you like people because they're like you. That's really not just pretty superficial, it's grotesquely superficial. We just like people because they're like me. They're like a little mirror of my false ego, so I really like them. Real friendship is when we actually try to see the soul and put what pleases Guru and Krishna in the center of us. And when there is differences, then you really have to grab on to that principle and take shelter of it to sustain our relationship. Otherwise, we make aparads, we try to control each other, we try to discourage each other, we try to defeat each other, we try to show each other up, and everything like that. But, you know, some years later, he passed away, you know, many years later. But for about 30 years, the respect that we had for each other was absolutely incredible. Anything that he saw that I did that pleased Prabhupada or any success, he would just be so proud. He would love to talk to everybody about it. And I was the same way with him. But that was earned. What to speak of friends, husbands and wives. Grihastas, I don't have to tell you anything. On the day of marriage, sometimes there is that illusory idea that this was made in heaven. But for devotees, we don't want to go to heaven. We want to go back to God. And somehow or other, as long as we're here on this earth planet, nothing's made in heaven. Then the real Krishna consciousness of our relationship is not making each other suffer, as Govinda Prabhu was so eloquently describing through so many examples from Mahabharata and Ramayana yesterday.
But challenges will come, differences will come. How are we willing to overcome them on the higher principle? That my respect for you, my care for you, is the way I'm serving Krishna. The friendship between us is what's going to please Krishna. But real friendship. But to make real friendship understandable, we have to understand the time, place, and circumstance. Like Srila Prabhupada did in such instances that I cited. Srila Prabhupada was very, very strong with Siddhanta in philosophy. And he really expected us to follow. But if somebody couldn't do it, in most every case, Prabhupada would lovingly accept them and engage them in a way that they could come back to that standard. He wouldn't reject them. He wouldn't discourage. If he discourages them, then they're in a hopeless state. But he would point out where the problem is. He wouldn't just sentimentally say, "Oh, it's all right, it's all right." He would point out where the problem was, but he would encourage them to solve the problem, to rise up. Because he cared. He didn't want them to stay in Maya. And not wanting them to stay in Maya means he doesn't just accept Maya and just let them think it's all right. And at the same time, he doesn't not show his love and care to empower them to overcome it. In Krishna consciousness, that is what leadership is. It was said yesterday in questions and answers, management and leadership. Management and leadership should be integrated very nicely. But integrated means they're two separate things, and we bring them together. Spiritual leadership is very much an internal condition of being connected to Krishna and doing the needful to help others be connected to Krishna. Management is the different organizational methods to implement those principles, to sustain those principles, and or just to get things done in the service of Krishna. So management is a tool. Leadership is a state of consciousness. And the tools are really, really valuable, especially when we have that leadership state of consciousness of being a friend, being a servant, putting the higher principle of what pleases Krishna as our only real purpose and goal in life, our only standard of success. In today's verse, we're reading it, but in Srimad Bhagavatam, every verse really has such depth in philosophy and feeling. Here there's these 10 brothers, and Lord Vishnu has come to them, and he's saying, "I am very pleased with you because of your friendship with each other, and how your friendship
has always remained with devotional service to me as the very center of your relationship. Not just a sentimental friendship. Sentiment is there. Bhakti is about pure sentiment based on deep philosophy. Love. They loved each other. But for Krishna to be congratulating them and so pleased with them, we can understand from between the lines that friendship they shared with each other was not easy. They were wandering around performing austerity for years, 10 of them. They were underwater for a long time. Now, when you're just together 24 hours a day practically, obviously there's going to be some differences of opinion. There's going to be certain mannerisms and inclinations of a person that really start bothering you. If somebody's sitting across the temple from you in class and does something you really, you don't even notice it, but you're with them all day, then those little things really become go into your mind like this kind of insect that starts eating away your brain. Familiarity breeds contempt. That's a material principle. Familiarity deep does bring contempt. Why? Because certain things just don't match my ego. You know, you eat with somebody and they make some noises and they can't tolerate this. Get out from here. So these things happen. But because they put Krishna in the center, they put the service that their father had given them to please Krishna. And then because of their sincerity, Narada Muni gave them instructions, and Lord Shiva gave them instructions. And they took those instructions of these great souls as their life and souls. And because they were following their gurus with such sincerity, and they were forgiving each other, and they were tolerating each other, to help each other to become liberated for Krishna's pleasure, they cared about each other, body, minds, and souls. Therefore, Krishna's pleased. And Srila Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. Trinadapi suniche nataror iba sehishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We really do have to ultimately apply this verse to our life to cooperate. Because as devotees, we want to create a community of love and trust based on this friendship for our entire lives. Not just some passing experience. That's what community means. People are together for their lives for a higher purpose. That is spiritual community. And because a leader inspires that type of relationships, not only that the leader has with the devotees that he or she is leading, but if people actually love the leader and care about what the leader is saying, then they will somehow or other make the way by which they can have those relationships with each other. Despite the differences, inevitable differences. Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate for this mission of Krishna. So anyone can talk about loving Prabhupada. We can sing songs about loving Prabhupada. We could open websites about loving Prabhupada. We can speak eloquent philosophy about loving Prabhupada. But to love Prabhupada means to do it on his terms, not on our terms. In his terms, is cooperate. But we'll do so many other things, and we'll try to prove our love in so many other ways, especially when we are not willing to cooperate. We have to somehow or other justify. I'll show my love for Prabhupada by how I crush everyone who doesn't agree with me in the name of Prabhupada. That's my love for Prabhupada. And that's happening all over the world. Happens in every religion. But it's a matter of whether we really want to please Prabhupada or not. That's how we show our love. Because unless we cooperate, we can't really expand a society. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada in this purport is... it's simultaneously quite subtle what he's saying, but it's also very striking. Because he's saying, in a Krishna conscious society, there will be so many different people with so many different opinions. But he says, but Krishna consciousness is, those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. Actually, in, I'm going to read this whole little area again because it's quite important. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within this material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to having different opinions and leaning toward material things. Actually, very important word. If we're Krishna conscious, there cannot be two opinions. There's only one goal: to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, such a disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstance. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy. So Srila Prabhupada is saying, under any circumstances. And there are so many examples within our scriptures of people who have so many different natures, different ways of thinking, different propensities and tendencies, and therefore very strongly different opinions. Some common examples cited yesterday in the questions and answers: Draupadi and Bhima. Ashwatthama was brought by Arjuna. Bhima said, kill him now. Draupadi said, no, let him go. These are different opinions. And they weren't just like intellectual opinions. They were coming from the core of the hearts of these people. Bhima's a Kshatriya. He did wrong. He killed our children. It is the law of Dharma. He must be killed. Bhima was right. Can't argue with him. But Draupadi argued with him. Draupadi's not a Kshatriya lawmaker. She had, you know, that background too as a lady, but now she's speaking from the perspective of a mother. She knew all the Dharma, you know. Draupadi could be really fiery and strong, we see in Mahabharata. But in this case, she's speaking as a mother. She just lost her children. And the mother of Ashwatthama is an innocent lady. Why should she suffer like me? It says only her only son. Let him go. Let his mother live in peace. So Arjuna, he's like many of us. There were many questions yesterday. What if our authorities give us different opinions? You know, we just want a black and white answer. Follow this and reject that. But we have to see what the opinions are and who the authorities are and everything like that. But in this situation, elder brother's an authority, Bhima. And a wife is really an authority. Draupadi. Yes? So Krishna helped him to understand these two different types of personalities and what they wanted, and somehow or other adjust things so that he was honoring both his wife and his brother. And that's the way he did it. And that's what pleased Krishna. When the example yesterday given, Vibhishan came to take shelter of Ram, and Sugriva said, kill the man. Beat him. Plunder him. Kill him. And some of the other soldiers, monkeys, they were saying, you know, we should at least punish him and send him back, reject him. We cannot accept him. And Hanuman said, no, I saw his face. He's an honest and sincere person. We should accept him as one of our own brothers, wholeheartedly, without question. He's one of us. That's a pretty serious disagreement. And it wasn't just like a casual thing, because Vibhishan is extremely powerful. You have to really trust him to let him in your camp. Hanuman, he jumped across the ocean and he went through so many tests on his way. Surasa, Simika, mountains. But somehow he made it. Sundarkanda of Ramayana tells so many graphic, incredible stories about Hanuman crossing the ocean. And a little later, when the others wanted to cross the ocean, they had to build a bridge. Massive bridge, 800 miles long, 100 miles wide. That was a major engineering project. But to speak of execution. And even Ram took the bridge with Lakshman. But Vibhishan, he effortlessly, with no impediments at all, when he left Ravana, he just kind of floated across. He just went into the sky, and within seconds, he floated across the ocean and was there in Ram's camp. He didn't need a bridge. He didn't have to jump and pass all kinds of tests. He was such a powerful mystic. He had so much influence. He didn't have to jump on a mountain and all the snakes and the herbs on the mountain were crushed by his feet. He just held his club, just chanted a mantra and went across the ocean. Yes? Quite incredible. And he was really big. And he was the brother of Ravana, the Rakshasa by caste. So Sugriva's thinking about all these, look at how powerful he is. Look at how he just came here and he's brother of Ravana. We have to have total faith and trust in this man to accept him right in our inner ranks. Otherwise, he'll create total havoc in our armies. We don't trust him. We don't even know who he is. Kill him! Hanuman said, no, no. We should put our total trust in him. And accept him as our own brother forever. Now, Sugriva and Hanuman are both great devotees. And Sugriva was Hanuman's superior as far as hierarchy. Sugriva was the king. Hanuman was the minister. Yes? From a devotional perspective, Hanuman may have been superior. But from a hierarchy perspective, Hanuman was always very, very obedient to Sugriva. He was his servant. And that's why when Sugriva was saying, kill him, Hanuman didn't say anything. But then Ram asked Hanuman, what is your opinion? And Hanuman revealed his heart. He was disagreeing. And Sugriva really got mad when he heard that, and he started lodging all sorts of arguments against what Hanuman said, because it was so dangerous. But the fact was, Sugriva was only speaking what was in his mind, intelligence, and heart, because he felt this is the best interest to please Ram. He wasn't about his ego. It wasn't that he just didn't like Vibhishan. He said he felt this is an impediment and dangerous to Ram's purpose. Therefore, we cannot accept it. And Hanuman, he wasn't thinking, I like the man. He was thinking for Ram's purpose. So they're both completely fixed in what will serve and fulfill Ram Chandra's desire to get Sita back. And they have totally opposite opinions. But there was actually no ego. Because as soon as Ram said, I like what Hanuman's saying, then what did Sugriva say? Sugriva said, Ram, you know, you just don't get it. You know, you're being sentimental, Ram. Ram, Hanuman's giving you misinformation. You're listening to the wrong people. Huh? That's what we do. When somebody tells us something that we don't like to hear, or even if our gurus or our leaders tell us something, somebody's giving a misinformation. It's not like this. You don't understand. Immediately, what did Sugriva and Jambavan and everybody else do? As soon as Ram said, yes, what Hanuman's saying pleases me, Sugriva jumped up and says, I will accept Vibhishan as my brother forever. Everyone did. Because ultimately, they just wanted to please Ram. They didn't hold on to anything. Sugriva didn't say, what is this? He's supposed to be junior to me. He's disagreeing with me. Okay, Ram, I'll do it, but Hanuman, I'm going to get you for this one. That's what some of us do. But there was no ego. Samsidhi or Haditoshanam. It pleases Ram to do this? All right, Hanuman, If what you're saying pleases Ram more than me, then I 100% support and accept what you're saying. I don't have to prove myself. All I have to do is please Ram. So Sugriva completely surrendered to Hanuman's will because that's what pleased Ram. But it's not that Hanuman said, okay, now I should be the king and you should be the minister because Ram likes me better than you. No, Hanuman didn't want any. He remained the minister under Sugriva. This is Vaishnava relationships. And this is what Prabhupada's speaking about. Keeping Krishna in the center. And if we want to be leaders, truly, we're not going to have much effect in our community, in our society, positive effect, or in the world, unless we can inspire unity and cooperation within the inevitable diversities. It doesn't mean just accepting bogus things or immoral things. That's not what it means. We deal with things according to the intensity of if there's true deviation. But if there's different opinions or different styles or different levels of consciousness, we protect Siddhanta, but at the same time we try to create an environment where people could come to that higher level. Not that if people aren't there, we just make sure they always stay down. We have to bring them up effectively. That's leadership. And in order to do that cooperation, it's what Krishna demands of us. It's what Prabhupada demanded of us. Whether we like it or not, our spiritual lives are very much hinged around how we're willing to take up the sacrifice of cooperating. But we can't inspire cooperation unless we're cooperative. If leaders are fighting with each other and they tell their followers, you should cooperate, it doesn't work. There's no substance to it. We have to exemplify. It was explained, I believe it was Shyamananda Prabhu, about Srila Prabhupada or Radha Gopinath Prabhu. You know, he invited his godbrothers in so many ways to help. And he really wanted to work with them in every way. He took the role he took because none of the others really were able to help. But he was really extremely eager to cooperate and share. Always. So if there's not cooperation among the leaders, it's going to be very, very difficult to actually inspire other people to cooperate with each other. And, you know, I've been in this movement for how many years is that? 45 years. It's 2016 now. And I'm not going to go into any details, but there's been many blissful days, and there's many very, very challenging years. But blissful days and challenging years, and challenges bring out more bliss, actually, but not, you don't experience it at the time always. And I've come to learn, you know, among Prabhupada disciples who are within our ISKCON movement, there are many different natures and many different ways of doing things and many different opinions and many different ideas. But somehow or other, even if I'm being attacked, whatever it may be, if I do not try to personify what the Bhagavatam is speaking about, for personal issues, forgiveness and tolerance is very important for a leader to demonstrate for the purpose of cooperation on a higher level. Then I can't expect anyone else to do that. So leaders must try to exemplify among each other what they're teaching the people that they are leading. So many of you may be really cooperative and agreeing with each other, and many of you may have serious issues with each other. And we all know what serious issues with each other are among people who are taking some degrees of leadership and maybe on this level or this level. Is you're absolutely, deeply, profoundly, aggressively sometimes convinced that you're right, convinced that the other's wrong. You may be right. You may be wrong. But either way, you're wrong. If you don't come together in a higher platform. That's what Sugriva and Hanuman did. They came together on what pleased Ram. That's what Draupadi and Bhima did. They came together on what pleased Krishna. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's so many stories. Of devotees who are very different. But they had no animosity with each other. Advaitacharya is the leader of a Brahmin community. Most learned scholar. Living by the highest principles of Brahminical society. And Haridas Thakur is an untouchable, totally rejected by Brahmins, by many. And they were best of friends. Haridas Thakur lived in a cave with a snake. And Advaitacharya had a nice house. Haridas Thakur was a total celibate Goswami. He had no family. No relations. Even when Maya Devi personified came to ask him to enjoy with her, he just said, I haven't finished my rounds. Just wait, let me finish my rounds. He chanted all night long. And when the night ended, she said, what happened? He said, I didn't finish my rounds. Come back tomorrow. After 3 days, she took initiation from him. Hare Krishna. And Advaitacharya was married to Sita Thakurani, and he had 6 children. And he had a nice house, really nice house, in Shantipur. He had another house in Navadvip. So they were very different, but they were best friends. Why were the best friends? They totally respected each other.
Haridas worshipped Advaita, although he was a grihastha with wife and children and property. And Advaita honored and worshipped Haridas, although he was a renunciate who just lived in caves. Because the higher principle, Amanina Manadena, they honored and respected each other because not of their personal differences, but they had something so strong in common. All those personal differences only enhanced their appreciation for each other. Their personal difference, I mean their personal unity, was they wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world for the pleasure of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna. So we want to help Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. If we can't create unity among ourselves, how can we expect, if the leaders can't communicate, the counselors, the mentors, if we cannot create unity among ourselves despite our differences, that means we have to humble ourselves. Not everyone else has to humble themselves. Because that's what happened. After class, people will say, you heard what Radhanath Swami said. You have to humble yourself. Then we could cooperate with each other. I can feel it in my heart that that's what some of you are thinking. You're wrong. I'm right. You have to change. Unless it's a serious Siddhanta issue of, you know, then, you know, most of our problems are usually more emotional and social and just ways of implementing the right thing. That's where most of our issues are. And it's the way we become Krishna conscious. Because there's only one way to actually be Krishna conscious. To please Krishna. Now, how do we please Krishna? Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado. By pleasing our guru. And myself, and my god brothers, and god sisters, Diksha gurus, Shiksha gurus, all we want is for everyone to come together to please our guru, Srila Prabhupada. And he's speaking these words in today's purport. So it's very clear what Prabhupada wants of us, what he expects of us, what the standard of actual Krishna consciousness is. The standard of Krishna consciousness is what Prabhupada and Krishna are telling us, not what we interpret. That's why we need a guru to help us overcome our tendencies to put I and mine in the center in one way or another. When we give up this need to say, I have done this, and when we find the joy of saying, we have done this, then we're actually approaching Krishna consciousness in a way that Krishna will be pleased. Hare Krishna. Thank you. And on the subject of leadership, when we can truly empower people, when we can inspire people, spiritual leadership, there's different levels. The most effective level is to inspire people. It's incredible what human inspiration connected to Krishna can do. It can empower people to give up their vices if they're inspired. It can empower people to do incredible projects. Simply managing and, you know, giving good organizational plans are really, really necessary. But management becomes really, really difficult. Because you can't, trying to force people to do certain things has limits. But when people are inspired, they'll do it and they'll put their heart into it and they'll go beyond. They'll go on the borders of what's expected of them. They'll put their heart and soul into it. If it pleases my guru, I'll do it all night, every night, all day, all night. I'm not being asked to, but I'll just do it because I will inspire him, because it will please him. That's inspiration. Otherwise, I'll do my service from 9 to 5, and after that, forget it, you know. Inspiration is when we really put our body, mind, and words and hearts into our devotional service. We will make it right, because this is what Prabhupada and Krishna and our gurus want us to do. And management flows really easy when there's inspiration. So we have to inspire each other. That's the real calling. Leaders have to inspire other leaders. And then with that inspiration, we inspire those who are serving. A leader doesn't think I'm a leader. A leader thinks I'm a servant. I'm a servant of every one of these people. And how do I serve them? By inspiring them through leadership. Servant of the servant of the servant. Yes, Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Yesterday and today, you touched upon some of the very vital core aspects of our spiritual life, with a lot of insights on how to do things like you were talking about the resolving the black and white. It was very wonderful. Bringing synthesis of the two. And also today you spoke about the friendship aspect. I always had a question when I read Srimad Bhagavatam, that Lord Vishnu told Garuda to go away when Vasuki was to be used for Samudra Manthan pastime. Lord Vishnu tells him to go away. So what I understood was Garuda loves Lord Vishnu. Vasuki also is willing to serve Lord Vishnu. But they both have problem with each other. You know? So Lord Vishnu told Garuda to go away. Which means they both are willing to cooperate for the sake of mission as much as is needed. Otherwise, they are individual personalities and they have a mismatch. Higher than that, I thought about the demigods and the demons. They were willing to cooperate, but their cooperation was also self-serving cooperation, because there was a goal at the end to be achieved, the amrit without which in one of your lectures, you were saying that they are socially different, psychologically different, in a human in relation to Krishna, all that you said. So, where they offer self-serving cooperation. And Yudhishthira Maharaj's cooperation with Duryodhana, if you see, Yudhishthira is called as Ajatashatru, for whom enemy was not born at all. But still Duryodhana was the enemy of Yudhishthira Maharaj. But Yudhishthira Maharaj was always willing to cooperate, but Duryodhana wasn't. But still Yudhishthira did his best in that relationship. So when I compared all these different examples, I felt Yudhishthira is a very ideal example. Because from his side he is ready. In our movement, it's not only in our movement, even in the material world, Srimad Bhagavatam says in many places there are three types of living entities. Some are friendly, some are neutral, and some are inimical. All three are found. And it is not possible to nullify it and say that, make a blanket statement that, no, we should treat everybody equally. Of course, from our side, we may try to treat everybody equally, like what Yudhishthira Maharaj was trying to do. One can aspire for that. But still, it is observed that the differences are there. So after assimilating this much information, I came to one conclusion which I want to confirm from you as a conclusion. That for this, actually we have joined this mission to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, you know. And so for serving mission, I will go to any extent to cooperate, to become humble, you know, to become simple, and willing to bend my opinions and everything with another person, with whom I may have no other type of friendship other than the mission. Because actually mission is the central thing that binds two people together. Otherwise we would have never been friends in this world at all. What has brought us together is Srila Prabhupada's mission, the Vaishnava's mission, the Acharya's mission. It has brought us. So we work for the mission, especially with those who are inimical and those who are neutral. And those who are friendly, we build the friendships, which is very natural for us. Because I have always seen, when you love someone, you become blind to their faults also. You know, it is a very common thing. Like a crow says, my child is the most beautiful child in the whole world. You know? Because the crow loves the offspring, so it considers everything as alright. And the same is true for the crow's child also. You will say, my mother is the most beautiful mother in the whole world. When there is love between two people, they become blind to each other's deficiencies. So, amongst the three people, those who are friendly, we are friendly. And those who are inimical and neutral, we keep mission in the center. And for the sake of mission, we put aside all our false ego and false prestige and everything and cooperate. Is it a correct understanding, Maharaj?
I hope so. Srila Prabhupada signed his letters, "Your ever well wisher." That means whether one was his friend or inimical or neutral, he was their well wisher. Obviously, we have to reciprocate with people according to our relationships with them. But it should be as a well wisher. In the story of Vasuki and Garuda, sometimes devotees need their own space. And leadership is to understand that. You know, leadership is to give people services where they, you know, sometimes cooperation means giving people their own space. It doesn't mean they have to stay in the same room and chant their rounds in unison with each other every day. You know, Prabhupada would send somebody to Africa and someone to Russia. But he wanted them to be united with the higher principle. So different, because to inspire someone, we have to value and encourage a sincere and good person. If a leader sees a person as basically sincere and good and has the right philosophical conclusions and the right motivations, if we micromanage such a person, if they survive, they'll never really be able to do much more than be micromanaged. But if you inspire a person and appreciate a person to actually put their heart into something, to create something, and, you know, help them with their mistakes, not bless them unless their mistakes are really evil or something. If they're good people, you know, let them learn, let them grow. Be there for them. Then we actually create leaders. It's very common. A good leader creates other leaders. A great good leader doesn't just create a lot of followers. A good leader creates good leaders. And at the same time, they're following. If becoming a leader means we don't follow, if becoming a leader means the people we're encouraging don't follow, then they're not leaders at all. A good leader is a good follower. As Prabhupada said, a good guru is a good disciple. You cannot be a good guru unless you're a good disciple. In the same principle, a good leader is a good follower, and a good leader is one who inspires others to be good leaders and good followers. Who can inspire others to be good leaders and good followers. And according to, and leadership also means that understanding with wisdom and with sensitivity and with intelligence, giving people the place that they could best actually grow in their Krishna consciousness. That's, you know, the Varnashram principle. If you put somebody in a place that they're destined to fail because they don't have that propensity, you know, if a person really is a wonderful, excellent pujari, and you make them a, you know, zonal secretary, he's going to probably really live in anxiety because he just can't do it right, or else he's going to have to really, or she's going to have to really, you know, cover all their tracks to prove to people they're doing the right thing and hide all their defects. And we see leadership where a person could best serve according to their nature and engage them accordingly. It's important. And give people value. Somebody may be really excellent as a cook. They may not be so good at going out and giving public lectures. But it's not that one is more advanced or one spreading the movement more than the other. Whether you're a brahmachari or a grihastha, whether you're a cook or a book distributor or a preacher, wherever you're most empowered to preach, to serve, leadership is trying to, you know, give that encouragement, give that sustainable inspiration. And that's organization. We're well-wishers. So Vishnu is expert. Whatever reason. Obviously, Garuda is very advanced. He's supremely advanced. We have him in all our temples. Lord Chaitanya, every day at Jagannath, he stood under Garuda's feet, lotus feet, to take darshan of Jagannath. And Vasuki, he wanted to do service too. But one's a snake and one's an eater of snakes. So they were actually united and cooperative in serving the Lord, but the Lord was expert. They needed their own space. Yes? And by giving them their own space, they could be really cooperative. that answer your question? To tell you the truth, I didn't even know what your question was. I hope that answers your question. Thank you. Yes.
So we have
Govinda Prabhu is raising his hand.
Maharaj, I was discussing with Shyamala Prabhu, yes, ma'am, about there are some people, the subordinates, this is what we discussed, there are some people who need to be depending on their leaders for the rest of their life. Even if we give them independence, they will feel, my leader has rejected me. And there are some people who need independence from their leader after some time. And amongst the leaders also, this is whatever we observe. There are some leaders, they work very well with those people who always stay under them. They can make them, you know, do very well, flourish. But there are some leaders, you know, they work with people only for some time. So is it right or otherwise, because when people work under them all the time, that becomes their condition, that if you don't work under me, then you are rebellious. And then you know, they get different kinds of people. And some leaders, they want to say, okay, now you go, I empower you. But they say, no, I want to stay with you. And now, how do you reconcile all these different combinations? You are very good in this, so that's what I've seen.
But you're actually better than me. How would you reconcile it?
That is my question. So.
Yes. So you are expressing your independence. Kaladesha Patra. Time, place, and situation is important. That it's a weakness in a leader, if they can only do well and inspire people who are totally content to be micromanaged by them. If that's what a person's need is, then we try to provide that. That's fine. That's wonderful. But there are going to be different people. It's not that one is more advanced than another either. You know, somebody who's just wants to just follow, you know, in a very, very direct and personal way, that's beautiful. If someone, after some time, as God brothers especially, you know, comes, you know, over some years and has other ways and really wants to do something, and it's for the right purpose, then, you know, we're not God brothers. I mean, we're not in a stringent military hierarchy. We're God brothers and God sisters, yes? So if somebody is developing in that way and really has a passion to do some certain projects in a certain way, and it's for the right reason, if it's favorable to Krishna consciousness and favorable to society, we should try to facilitate that. But overall, it's a state of consciousness. And this is what leadership actually means in Krishna consciousness. This is the crux of a lot of issues. Nothing is mine. Everything is ours. There's an assembly of many leaders. Yes? And if somebody is not working so well under me, then we should talk to the assembly of other leaders. And, you know, what's the best way, what's best for our movement, what's best for our society, and what's best for this purpose person? It may be that, you know, as a God brother or God sister, they'll do better under somebody else than me. And that's not an insult. That's not a failure. That's natural. And if we understand they're not mine, they're ours. They're all the property of Srila Prabhupada, and we're all the leaders. And if somebody could best serve under somebody else, then we should be happy. Serve under this person. You're not my property. Nothing is mine. And that is the tendency that leadership, leaders, having a leadership position, unless we really understand the spirit of humility, it can create a very ugly false ego. And the false ego never identifies itself as false ego. The false ego will identify itself as the higher will of Krishna. Yes? That's what false ego is about. The false ego will not make you think, oh, I have such a terrible false ego. That's humility. The false ego is, I'm right, and this is mine. And why is it mine? Because I'm representing Krishna. Whatever it is. But nothing is mine. Whether we're a mentor, whether we're a counselor, whether we're a GBC, whether we're a guru, whatever it is, nothing is mine. Everything is in ISKCON, belongs to the founder Acharya Prabhupada, and under his loving guidance, it belongs to Krishna, everyone. And in our more local areas, it belongs to our gurus and our leaders. And we're all just working together to serve that purpose. So if somehow or other, we're not able to work with somebody so well, whether it's my fault or his fault, or whether it's just the chemistry of the nature of the people or the circumstances, then what pleases Krishna? To actually create that unity and friendship. And that may be better if we... if we have this spirit, nothing is mine. And that's why leaders need to come together and be united. A person may need a help that we cannot provide them. That's not necessarily a defect of us. It's just human nature. It's situations. An example. Grihastas. They have a whole different set of issues and problems than brahmacharis. If there's a brahmachari who was married, who maintained a loving, faithful, Krishna-centered relationship with a wife, raised children, got them married to nice Krishna-conscious families, if there's a brahmachari who's done all that, then he can understand what a grihastha is going through. If a brahmachari hasn't done all that, then he can try to inspire a Krishna consciousness, but when it comes to the struggles that grihasthas have to go through, they should seek guidance and direction from other grihasthas who know how to do that. How to deal with in-laws. How to deal with children who are being, you know, distracted by modern society. How to deal with ladies trying to chant their rounds after they give birth, as you were describing yesterday. Brahmacharis aren't even supposed to think about these things. So if we're saying, I'm your leader, I'm your mentor, I'm your guard, I'm in charge of this project, you have to do things my way. You have to come to this program, you have to come to this RT, you have to do this sadhana this way. And do that to grihasthas? And some grihasthas will, yes, yes, this is great, but it probably won't last. What's sustainable is when brahmacharis give what they know how to give. And for all the rest, grihasthas need senior grihasthas to guide them. What does that mean? That means we're sharing. This person, whoever is best fit to help that person, I'm going to try to connect them in that way. And if somebody's having a hard time with me, God brothers, God sisters, whatever, we try to connect them with somebody who can help. Not just try to beat them down. The idea is to lift them up. It's ours. Every devotee within our congregation is Prabhupada's child. And unitedly, as leaders, we have a responsibility to do what's best for them. But I and mine is a serious challenge because it's a strong propensity to claim ownership. We have to take responsibility, but not ownership. Krishna is the proprietor. Prabhupada is the proprietor on behalf of Krishna. My responsibility is to do what's best in the whole picture for the individuals and for the society. Does that address your question? Huh? Would you like to say something now? Thank you.
This is a question from someone. Pujya Gurudev, thank you very much for a wonderful class on friendship and care. Somehow in my life, everyone around me feels my friendship and caring attitude, except my wife. Can you enlighten on this issue of how one has to behave so that wife also feels that caring and friendship attitude?
Well, to be consistent with my previous answer, I never had a wife. I think it's good if you consult Rohini Nandan Prabhu or Krishna Chandra Prabhu or Dayal Chandra Prabhu or Mahaprabhu or Srinathji Prabhu or Bamsidhar Prabhu or Jayadev Prabhu. Don't ask Govinda Prabhu. Radhe Shyam Prabhu. We can give you some general guidelines for sure. But people who have experience in the subject are important to learn from also. The general guideline is try to look at yourself and, you know, why is my wife not like that? What is it about me that is making my wife appear to be not appreciating me? It's easier to just say, you know, she's, it's convenient to blame somebody else. But if we want to apply the Krishna conscious principle, we have to first look to ourselves. What is it about me that's making it so difficult for her to cooperate with me? How can I encourage her to do so? That's where it begins. And beyond that, to speak to people who've been through it all and who have made great spiritual progress in the process. But from a sannyasi's perspective, I have a very simple solution. Accept it as your purification. And surrender to Krishna. And really take shelter of the holy names. And really try to be a better husband. That's what I would say. But that's not enough, so you should speak to Rohini Nandan Prabhu. Thank you.
Respected Guru Maharaj, I am very grateful to you for giving us this wonderful, rare gift of your kind association on the occasion of New Year. Maharaj, as you mentioned in your class, that leadership in Krishna consciousness is an internal state of consciousness. In the organizational setup, we are empowered to become a leader, although we may not have the necessary spiritual advancement to actually care in the best way for ourselves and other devotees. How do we handle this kind of situation? In Srila Prabhupada's life and preaching in ISKCON also, we saw Prabhupada empowering many devotees at a very young age, which sometimes affected the devotee or community in an unfavorable way. How do we understand it?
First principle is to be humble enough to acknowledge and recognize that we're not qualified. And therefore we do need help. Srila Prabhupada empowered very young devotees to take positions of authorities. And two things. One is, even if they weren't so good, but they were sincere, and they were honestly trying to follow. They weren't breaking regulative principles, they weren't teaching some contrary philosophy. They weren't abusive. But they may not have been so advanced spiritually, but they were trying to follow. And Prabhupada expected us to cooperate with such people, even if they weren't so perfect. In my own life, I was under a lot of authorities who were not necessarily so advanced. But I really tried to follow in as surrender way as possible, because that's what pleased Prabhupada. What kind of society is it if we'll only cooperate with a leader who's a paramhamsa? If for Prabhupada, we're willing to cooperate with a leader who's may not even be as advanced as me. Of course, we shouldn't be thinking I'm more advanced than others. But with their defects and everything, they're trying. They're trying to organize things in a nice way, so we should try to be as cooperative and as willing to serve as possible. And as leaders, we shouldn't think that with the designation of a counselor or a mentor or a temple president, that makes me a pure devotee, or that makes me a very empowered person. Our empowerment comes when we humble ourselves before our gurus. And with that empowerment, we apply these principles we're speaking. That these are my guru's children. These are Srila Prabhupada's children. I'm here to serve them, to help them in the best possible way. If I can't do it, I'll get the help of other people to do it. But we shouldn't try to think that now I have to be now I'm the flawless, absolute authority for people. Because we're not. We're just the servant of the servant trying to serve our guru's children. That's all. Have that attitude and we'll actually make real spiritual advancement. And we'll actually become real leaders.
Thank you, Madam.
Does that answer the question?
I hope so. You were asked. What Hanuman suggested for Vibhishan worked out very well. But if a leader takes decision and it backfires multiple times, then in that case, how to maintain unity on higher level?
Are you, is that person speaking about being the leader or...
I think he's a follower. That's my speculation. You could give answer from the perspective if it's a follower asking the question that what if my leader takes a decision and it backfires multiple times, how to maintain it?
What does backfire mean?
Fails.
Fails.
What is? The decision is incorrect or it creates a chaos, disaster, blunder, nonsense decision. Doesn't work out.
Sounds like you definitely have the enthusiasm to answer this question. Time, place, and circumstance. This doesn't apply to every situation all over the world, but this applies to our congregation here. That we have our mentors, our counselors, our leaders, but we're all together serving, with a certain organized method. So if that's happening, then it's not that we can't go to some of our other counselors or leaders or someone like Radha Gopinath or Shamananda or Govinda or Sanat Kumar or Krishna Chandra. We can consult with them for anything. There's no monopoly over anyone by anyone. because you're a counselor of somebody or a counselee, we should, you know, follow the respect and the principles of taking that counseling, but still you can consult others. And in Radha Gopinath Temple, you know, our different satellites, you know, we have, you know, a certain, you know, very, very senior people who are helping to oversee, you know, all these different projects that are being created, or Pune has different systems of creating, overseeing. So we can consult other devotees. And we may find out that the real blunder is in my perception. Or we may, you know, these other devotees may be able to help our local leader to overcome these apparent failures. We're a family. There's a hierarchy, but still, within that hierarchy, we're a family. But we shouldn't simply disrespect or disobey the system, because that creates more harm than good. If we disrespect the system by just being going on an anarchy against somebody because of something, then it just creates disruption. If there's a problem, we should address it in a respectful and effective way. And that means to consult others. If our leader's doing things that, as Gauranga Prabhu was saying, that's our perception, failing and disasters. I don't think it's that bad. But it doesn't mean just we go in a revolution against them. Then the whole system's finished. What it means is we respect, we honor, we cooperate, but we go to other leaders who are actually organizing our whole system. And we can consult with them and work with them and try to actually come to a respectable way of resolving it. But the whole idea of just disrespecting and revolting and everything like that just creates a culture that's an extremely bad example for everyone who has to see that. There are problems. Prahlad Maharaj said, unless we're Krishna conscious, our solutions become a bigger problem than the problem. And if there's problem with certain types of leadership, if we don't address it with this type of respect for the system, then we'll probably, our way of trying to solve the problem will create a much, much bigger, worse problem. But at the same time, it doesn't mean we have to hide it and ignore it. There's a way, and within our system, there is the organizational body of people who are more or less detached from specifics, who we can approach, and we can work in a, while being respectful. Would you like to say anything, Radha Gopinath Prabhu? This regard, because you are the father of the mentor system. Please give microphone to Sri Radha Gopinath Prabhu.
This morning I was hearing one small audio clip sent every day by on the WhatsApp, and where you were some audio clip of yours where it says, you quoted Benjamin Franklin, who said, experience is the best form of, best teacher, and a fool learns no other way. So yesterday a question was asked about wisdom. I was thinking about it. And the best is if we can understand and hear through wise personalities, through scriptures. The next is when we see in front of us, or the third is the experience. So it's nice if all these systems are established and we understand and hear through this wonderful training sessions and have a refined or solidify the system also in such a way that immediately that kind of feedback can be given and resolved.
That's the answer. Thank you, Prabhu. My prayer is I become 10 million times happier when everyone claps for Radha Gopinath than if you clap for me.
Continue in Krishna consciousness, is it necessary that one should become part of the counselor system, or individually also one can practice Krishna consciousness?
The counselor system is not a law that is thrust upon us. It's an opportunity for spiritual development. The counselor is not a controller. The counselor is a guide, a friend, someone who's actually, through his or her experience and wisdom and knowledge of years in Krishna consciousness, is there to help us, to encourage us in the beginning stages, to train us and educate us in later stages, to just be a friend helping to look over us. And we all need that. It's not something that is imposed on anyone, but it's helpful. Whether we call a counselor or a bhakti briksha leader, or whether we call it a mentor or whatever we call, it's always good to have senior people that we could take guidance and help us through the problems that we will inevitably face in our spiritual lives. In the early days of ISKCON, the temples were very small. Usually the temple president or the senior matajis or the sannyasis and brahmachari parties or the senior brahmacharis, they were naturally the counselors for people. But as our movement grows, a lot of devotees don't really have that personal connection. So this system is to provide that. One more question.
So, these are two questions quite related to each other. In regards to getting solutions to our problems, Prabhupada wrote chapter Material Problem, Spiritual Solutions in one of his books. And also Bhagavatam says, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, take shelter of Krishna. But we are confused with another school of thought about material problem, material solutions. If you are suffering from a disease, you go to a doctor. Similarly, if you are suffering from emotional turmoil, you visit a psychologist. So this also looks appealing. Instead of chanting more or taking shelter of Bhagavatam or association of devotees, you take to shelter of experts in the outside world. So what should be our approach to resolving our own and our counselee's problems? Would it be wise to combine both the approaches? And another question says, similar to this, you gave an example in your Vrindavan where you resolved a problem with another devotee based on an understanding that cooperation would please Prabhupada. In today's ISKCON, we use various skills such as mediation, conflict resolution, to address conflicts. So should we always expect devotees to solve problems in the spirit of pleasing Prabhupada, or should we work to employ skills to resolve conflicts amongst devotees?
Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed Srila Prabhupada at their first meeting 1922 in Kolkata, that the only problem is a lack of Krishna consciousness and the only solution is Krishna consciousness. And in this age, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. It's through the chanting of the holy names that we actually become Krishna conscious. So the basis of our spiritual development is the chanting of the holy names. And how we are dedicated to sincerely chant the holy names is what's going to very much determine our spiritual progress. But at the same time, in order to actually chant in the right spirit, in order to sustainably continue chanting, there are considerations. We have 10 offenses. If it's just about just chanting, nothing else matters, why do we recite the 10 offenses? Because if we're making these offenses, then our chanting is not going to bring us very far. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, when you chant the holy names of the Lord, you become purified. But if you offend Vaishnavas, that very same name will punish you. So if we're making offenses, then our chanting is not going to be effective very well. So yes, chanting is the very core and foundation that has to be the center and focus of everything in our spiritual lives on the path of bhakti. But community and culture and philosophy and all of these various types of social aids are there so that we can actually sustainably chant in such a way that we really make spiritual progress. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he established the chanting of the holy names as the Yuga Dharma. But he also said that Vaishnav etiquette is the ornament that makes a devotee beautiful in the eyes of Krishna. If we follow Vaishnav etiquette and we're beautiful in the eyes of Krishna, then Krishna is going to reveal himself in his name. If we don't follow Vaishnav etiquette properly, if we're not respectful, if we're not humble, if we're not tolerant and forgiving, Krishna's not going to reveal himself in his name no matter how many millions of times we chant. So if chanting is our connection, but we have to live in such a way that Krishna's pleased to reciprocate through that connection of the holy names. In which case, we have to have the humility to understand that I need help in so many ways. If we're really sick, then that sickness is disturbing our service. It's disturbing our chanting. When Prabhupada was ill, he would go to Ayurvedic doctors. Yes? And they would, you know, sometimes he would follow, sometimes he didn't. But as long as you have this body, you have to do what's required for the body too. A simple example. When Prabhupada, after he had his heart attacks, I think he had a stroke, the devotees went and brought in a doctor. He was an allopathic doctor. And the doctor said to Prabhupada that you chant too much. He wasn't against chanting. In his own way, he was saying, you also need exercise. And what did Prabhupada do? Some of the devotees were thinking, who is this doctor telling Prabhupada he needs exercise? Prabhupada said, yes. And after that, he started his morning walk. Srila Prabhupada was totally disciplined. Every day, for at least an hour, he would take a morning walk. It was on a doctor's advice. And if we read Hari Sari Prabhu or Shruti Kirti Prabhu's diaries, they would massage Prabhupada every day. So massage is a material therapy. Morning walk was completely for his health. But the principle was he was taking that morning walk to get health to serve Krishna and all of us. And he was taking the massage so his body would be his body would be as optimum as possible to serve Krishna and all of us. It's not that they don't need exercise, don't need massage, don't need medicine, don't need I'm chanting Hare Krishna. If you want to do service with your body, you have to give the body certain facilities. And if there's a chemical imbalance in your mind, don't worry about it. Just deal with it. Are you able to focus on the holy name? Are you able to perform your service properly? Because of a mental imbalance in your mind, you're becoming outrageously angry at things and angry at people? If you have bipolar situations, which is a chemical thing, don't blame yourself for it. You know, whatever past karma, we take responsibility for it, but we at the same time we have to deal with it. So if going to, and you know, Shamananda's Prabhu, you know, consulting him, he's probably not going to be able to fix that. Because you know, we're preachers. I'm not either. We're teaching you how to take shelter of the holy name and how to chant the holy name without offenses, and we're trying to teach you how to engage in devotional service and do wonderful things for the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And if you need to go to a doctor to help your body to do that, or you need to go to a person who gives, you know, mental facilities to help you to be able to focus on that,
then that's what we should do. So mature Krishna consciousness is we have to, Prabhupada said, do the needful. We have to complement what's required so that we can actually become optimum instruments of Prabhupada's grace in our devotional service. But there are certain boundaries. You know, we don't take intoxications or these things. But for medical reasons, for exercise reasons, therapy reasons, if it helps our body and mind to be more stable and equipped for devotional service, Rupa Goswami says, accepts what is favorable for devotional service, reject what is unfavorable, and that includes all of these particular items stated in this question. I'd like to ask one more question.
Okay, Radhishan, to ask some clarification. That there was a last part of the question, Maharaj, which is that what he had asked. For solving problems of devotees in devotee community, sometimes people have serious conflicts with someone else. So to solve it, there are many material techniques being used by some of the leaders to, you know, cool them down. Because if you tell them, just surrender to Guru or Krishna, they don't surrender. You know. And sometimes it takes 16 hours, 20 hours of, you know, dealing with understanding that situation, using some techniques and that. So sometimes the ultimate end result is that they bring about some unity between them. It, probably because they feel they have been heard well. But implementing this kind of material techniques, is it conducive, or we should be inspired in a spiritual manner, spiritual way that learn to cooperate?
Because we're in the material world, sometimes we need material solutions to deal with situations. But we just have to understand in a proper perspective. Mediation is never going to bring us back to Godhead. Material organization is not going to bring us back to Godhead. And it's not going to empower us to bring other people back to Godhead. It's Krishna consciousness, which comes through surrendering to Krishna, to surrendering to the will of Krishna, taking shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, the holy names of Krishna. These are the nine processes of devotional service is what's going to bring us back to Godhead. But we're living in a material world with a human experience. And many of these human experiences, you know, have certain dynamics of conflicts between each other. So these techniques will not solve the problem of birth, death, old age, and disease, but they could help us to individually and collectively follow the process that will. If we're fighting, and okay, just chant Hare Krishna and surrender to Krishna, you won't fight. That's nice. If we stop fighting. But if it's still there, then that conflict is actually impeding the progress of our movement and the progress of our own spiritual lives. So if mediation helps us to resolve that, then together and individually we can better render service, we could better create a harmonious society, and we can better chant the holy names.
So these things are often very, very helpful and sometimes necessary for us to actually follow the process in our human condition and help to expand this wonderful gift of Lord Chaitanya. So they are aids. They are not the solution. They're aids for the solution. And the two extremes that are problematic, if we think because they're not directly the solution, therefore I reject them, just chant Hare Krishna. And if there's serious conflict, there's serious disease, and that may not be so favorable. But the other danger is when we think, and this is very much the tendency of devotees, because we become familiar with our sadhana, and we become familiar with Prabhupada's books, and we become familiar with the chanting of the holy names. And if, you know, some method comes up that gives you more empowerment, then we think this is the solution, and this is the answer to the problems of our society, and this is how we become Krishna conscious. And that's often what devotees do. Extremely dangerous. It's not the solution. It's an aid. The solution is what we're given. We shouldn't be familiar with what we're given. And because this is something new and it makes me feel good, this is the answer and everyone should do it. We see that happening a lot. That means basically you've lost Krishna consciousness. Unless we see the chanting of God's names and the surrendering to Krishna and Vaishnava relationships as the heart, and devotional service as the heart of our spiritual progress, and keep that focused, we're not going to make advancement. But these other things, like mediation, like doctors, like whatever else you're talking about, they are aids, marriage counselors. You know, you're chanting your rounds nicely, but if you're abusive with your family and you're not getting along and you're about to get divorced and everything like that and your children are suffering, then you need marriage counseling. But the marriage counseling is not going to send you back to Godhead. But it could be an aid to stabilize your marriage and understand, you know, the methods of the human relations you have so that you actually can, as a family, practice the principles of Krishna consciousness. So one extreme is we don't need any aids. If somebody's sick and dying, you just say, just chant Hare Krishna, get off the bodily platform. That's not the solution. And the other solution is just take this medicine, you'll go back to God. Understand the perspective. Certain things are aids to help us in the process, but it's the process that we have to take. We don't take shelter of the aids. We take shelter of Krishna through the nine processes of devotional service. And the aids are meant and often and sometimes necessary to so that we could do that. Yes. Radhi Shyam.
That answer was really hitting the nail of the problem. Thank you, Maharaj. It was very brilliant, very satisfying. But one small question I have. Maharaj, you can ask any of the devotees here. If somebody goes to a psychiatrist or a marriage counselor, the kind of solutions they give are horrible and deadly against Krishna consciousness. Many times, in most of the cases, actually. The karmic doctors, even I was sending some other boys who had problems, when they were sent to the psychiatrist, And the kind of things they tell them to do is detrimental to following the four related principles and everything. Of course, I don't know whether some of the devotees are experts here who can do that.
You should send them to Bhaktivedanta Hospital.
Yes.
Or someone who is in harmony with the principles of Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Thank you very much.